G'day, this is Stuart Emery, and you're listening to David Wood on the Kick-Ass Life Show.
Make your life better?
This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
Hey, good morning and welcome to the show. As you can tell by the quality, and if you've listened to Monday's show, you'll tell by that quality as well. We are back in the studio. I'm sitting here overlooking Okanagan Lake, and because it's the sort of start of winter, there's a little gray cloud up there, and the lake is still not reflecting like normal. But guess what? It is stunning, and I'm so glad to be home, sleeping in our own bed, snuggling in our own bed. How beautiful is that? You know, we have a great guest on. I hope you enjoyed Monday's show, all about, creating balance through goal setting and smarter goal setting. It's only 10 minutes long, so if you haven't caught that show yet, go back and have a listen. It's based on a friend of mine's book, Brian Klemmer, who sadly passed away. So I might actually dedicate this show to Brian and to every great person who's stepped out of their own zone into the zone of contribution. Brian wrote some amazing programs, wrote some incredible books. And so I'm going to dedicate this show to Brian Klemmer and everyone who's gone before him, who's lived a life of contribution. With that being said, I was thinking about having a song to intro our guest. And, this came up for me. This is really funny. It's from a musical, Cabaret. And Cabaret was one of the musicals I did as a kid. I did a lot. I was a teenager. But it was really as I was stepping out of my home, I was 15, leaving home, I found a lot of solace in my acting back then. I used to do about two plays a year. And Cabaret was one of these, as I was sort of maturing into a young man, the influence of some of the characters in this play. I'm talking about their real life characters, not the characters in the play itself, but the people I met and the people I hung out with was really a guiding light for me back then. So here's a little bit of Cabaret. Don't forget, you can find all these in the show notes if you're interested in listening to them again. Okay, so let's have a listen to this and I'll introduce you to our guest.
All that makes the world go round, that clinking, clanking sound, can make the world go round. If you happen to be rich and you feel like a night's entertainment, you can pay for a gay escapade. If you happen to be rich and alone and you need a companion, you can ring ding-a-ling for the mate. If you happen to be rich and you find you are left by your lover, though you moan and you groan quite a lot, you can take it on the chin, call a cab and begin to recover on your 14-carat yacht. Money makes the world go around, the world go around, the world go around. Money makes the world go around, of that we can be sure. I'm being poor.
Yeah, exactly. I'm being poor. And that sort of is a good setup for my guest, who really is living in Kuala Lumpur, to be honest. And some of the things you're going to learn on the show today is really, really important because, as we live a kick-ass life, we have to have this this financial house in order. But, what it means to be an investor and changing our mindset around money and what the steps are to follow. He's a trader, so he talks about trading and ego and sort of the simple rules of investing, what they are and how you can sort of learn them on this show. He gives you some great links. He'll give you some great links in there as well. And the idea about saving money and creating habits. And there's so much good stuff in the show. So I want you to sit back and relax and enjoy the wonderful Courtney Smith. So as usual, I'm sitting here and I'm, looking for a word to describe how I'm feeling in this moment when I've got an amazing guest coming on. This guest is all the way from Kuala Lumpur and this is going to be amazing. So how am I feeling? I'm feeling excited. and very grateful. So, Courtney, are you there?
I am here.
Now, Courtney, you are an amazing individual. Reading your resume, it's like the who's who. And I mean, as far as C-suite, you know, CIO, CEO, CSO, of very large, successful corporations. And you really are an expert, I would say. Would you say in the investment arena or the financial arena or both? How would you sort of term yourself?
I think most people would consider me an investment expert. I don't know about financial, but I do have a lot of knowledge in that area. I've been doing this for 40 years, so I've picked up a little bit on along the way.
And you've written 6 books. We'll get to that in a bit. But let me ask you a question. I always like to think of the layperson, somebody who's sitting at home right now, and maybe they've never, ever invested. And maybe they're even stuck in a job that they're not really happy with. And a lot of people who listen to this particular show are people that are looking for change. They really are sort of saying, look, you know what? I'm looking to really create my life in a different way. How would you term, when you talk about investing, what does it mean to be an investor? Can you sort of clarify that term for us?
Yeah, I mean, remember that at every moment in our life, we have a choice to either consume or to invest. And so all of us are implicitly investing if we or should be thinking about investing. So, for example, should I go buy that expensive car or should I take my money and put it in the bank or in the stock market or in the Forex market or whatever and make that money work for me? So even when we invest, that means we take our money and get it to work for us. But even when we go out and spend it on something else, that means we made an investment decision also not to invest. So to me, investment is something that's part and parcel of the everyday life of a normal human being.
And do you think that most people, fall into the trap of, I don't have enough to invest, so I never start? Is that something that you think a lot of people fall into?
Oh, everybody says, oh, investing's a good idea. I should make my money work for me. I'll start it tomorrow at the same time I start my diet.
I just got a picture in my mind there. I got to erase that picture. But I mean, you must have heard story after story after story of somebody who didn't have a small income, or they didn't have a lot of money, but have turned that small amount of focus, that focused investment, into large sums of money. And I mean, I know it's not the norm, but it must happen quite a lot, right?
You know, I get these people. For example, this is one of my favorites. Gentleman came and took one of my courses, and he made enough money in the next, I guess it was about 5 months, that he was able to bring forward his wedding by a year and buy his girlfriend a diamond twice the size he was expecting to be able to give it to her. And so I get stories like that all the time. I love them. That's what really turns me on doing this education.
Okay. And so education is a thing. And so let's sort of start at the beginning then. So I'm sitting at home and I've got this concept that I want to create wealth in my life, or I want to start having my money work harder than I work, or at least as hard. I mean, that concept of money working, why do you think it's not taught in schools?
Because I don't think the people in school have any clue what's going on. I always keep saying that I think it'd be much better if in high school they taught us how to be a millionaire, and then rather than take history, that would enable us to just hire a historian. Much, much more sensible as far as I'm concerned. But the reality is teachers don't know anything about making money. That's not what they've tuned their life to. That's not what they're interested in. And in fact, I would say that in most cases, school is anti-money. So it's really the opposite of teaching you how to control your money. They much prefer to allow you to be kind of poverty mentality but have a rich liberal arts education, but be poor.
And that money mindset is so important, right? Because, I mean, if we look at the environment that most of us grow up in, and we say that, you know, we inherit so much of how we think around money from our parents, our grandparents, our schools, our teachers, the newspaper, everything around us is kind of giving us this blueprint that finally shows up in our life. And really, what I love is the results tell the truth, right? So, I mean, if you're sitting there right now and there's nothing in the savings account, there is no money working for you, that's a result. And that's typically a result of a mindset around money. And how easy is it to change that mindset?
Oh, I think it's very difficult. I think that people need to take courses like yours in order to really attack it. In all of our courses, we spend the first 25% of the course, or just about all of our courses, talking about the psychology of investing, because it's the only hard part. Actually, the intellectual skills for learning how to invest profitably are very, very trivial, very easy to learn. However, people will fight it because they won't actually do it. And so although I spend 25% of most of my courses on the psychology, you know, I really believe that people need to be taking classes from people like yourself in order to really get expert direction in how to get their mindset correct for making money. The intellectual skills, as I say, I can teach that to somebody very easily. But will you actually follow the rules that I teach? That's the hard part of investing. Intellectual, easy, psychological, challenging.
Yeah, it's so true. And so if we look at then, if you were to impart, you're sitting there, you've got 171 countries listening right now. And now they're not all listening at once. But could you impart something like a starting point? What's a starting point where we could say, look, okay, so you're sitting there right now, you're hearing this information, and, you know, you're going to start this journey. So first of all, we're going to start investing in our own money mindset, in our own education. We're going to start changing the way we think, changing our environment. But can you give us some practical steps to sort of go through, or our starting point, you know, an ABC type of thing?
I think that from a psychological or from an intellectual perspective.
I think what do you think is most important? I mean, either or both. I mean, but let's say
psychology is the most important.
Yeah.
Yeah, psychology. Let me give one psychological thing and one intellectual. How's that?
Awesome. Perfect.
All right. And they're going to address the two most important things with investing success. The first one is psychology. And the most important thing, if I could get somebody psychologically to do, would be to not get their ego involved in their trading. You see, Pete, what happens is people, they'll go and they'll, you know, buy 100 shares of Apple. And then they have their ego all wrapped up into whether or not that one trade does well or not. Guess what? Apple's going to go up or down, and it has nothing to do with you. And yet people, like, they'll buy 100 shares, and if it goes down and they lose money, they get depressed. Why? Why is your ego wrapped up in whether or not Apple made you money or lost you money? And if the price of Apple goes up and you make money, why should you feel good about that? In other words, it may be entirely due to luck that you made or lost money. And yet people get all emotionally involved in a stupid stock. It's just a stock. It's just a trade. It has nothing to do with you. What you need to do is you need to be cool, calm, and collected, and keep that rational mindset when you analyze individual trades or investments that you're going to do. The second point that I would make from more of an intellectual thing is you've got to always have a stop loss for every trade you do. You see, the psychology of trading is the most important thing for trading success. But number two is risk management, making sure that when you do have a losing trade, it's trivial and it's not important, and so you don't get hurt badly. We saw literally tens of millions of people lose roughly half their money in just 2008. That was just a few years ago. Lost about half their money because they didn't put in a stop loss. Well, a stop loss is when you buy 100 shares of a stock, let's say for $50, you predetermine how much money you're willing to lose. Now, of course, we teach exactly where you should put that stop loss, so I don't want to trivialize that. But the basic concept is you limit the amount of money you lose if you have a losing trade. So the problem, of course, is that people, you know, like, let's say you buy a stock at 50 and you say, I'm going to get out if it drops 10%, which would be $45. Well, okay, so you have a 10% loss. It's not any big deal. So you carry on. But that's better than if the stock drops to 25 or 20 or 10 or whatever, and then you have a big loss. And we need to protect our capital at all times. Capital preservation is more important than capital appreciation, because if you can't protect your capital, then you won't have money there when the big bull market comes and you can really be making a tremendous amount of money. So you've got to stay focused on controlling your risk. So put a stop loss in on every position. Well, why don't people do this all the time? Well, it goes back to the problem, the first problem, which was the psychology. If I get stopped out of a position, it means that I took a loss. And people then get their ego and they say, well, I took a loss, therefore I was wrong, therefore I'm a bad person, or something bizarro going on between the ears.
Or their wife does.
Yeah. Well, either way, exactly right. Or their spouse exactly comes in and beats them over the head and shoulders with a 2x4.
Or husband, excuse me.
Or husband, yeah, spouse, please. We have to be politically correct here.
Yeah.
So, but that's what, those are two tips right there. Control your risk, and whatever rules you're using for trading, follow those rules dispassionately and don't get emotionally involved in your trading.
And if we move away for a second, I want to come back to the trading, obviously, but I want to move away for a second and look at, I do a lot of real estate investing, and we like investing in small companies and startups. And I can always tell somebody, there's that term sophisticated investor. And I know there's rules around sophistication, but truly it's experience and tolerance. And you know, when I go into anything, I always go in with a mindset that, you know, this could, especially a business, it could end up as nothing. And there could be a mammoth upside, but I'm not, my emotions don't get involved. Do you think it takes some time for somebody to develop that sort of emotional tolerance and that experience where they can just sit in it and understand, well, I've taken the precautions, I put in the stop loss, I just let that one go, and I keep doing my thing over and over again, knowing that it's peaks and valleys, knowing that it's going to ebb and flow.
There's no question. One of the principles we talk about is that we have to be consistent and persistent. So if we follow the proper rules of investing, then that's going to reduce the psychological stress. It's going to increase the psychological happiness related to trading, and it's going to keep us cool, calm, collected. If we can do that, then the upside potential of investing is unbelievable. As you know from working with Harv Eker, he teaches that there's three pillars of wealth. One is real estate that you mentioned. One is owning your own business. And the third one is investing. And when you go back and you look at those top 10 or top 100 richest people in the world, guess what? Investing shows up disproportionately large in that list. And as a result, you know, you need to be focusing on this in your life. Well, I shouldn't say you need to. You can become rich in many, many ways. But there's no point in getting rich if you're miserable. So, well, I guess that's not right. Better to be poor and rich than poor and miserable. But the point being is that you want to stay focused on going through those peaks and valleys in a very calm manner, in a very relaxed manner. And so we say you should be consistent and persistent.
Mm. There's so many metaphors about life in everything you've said that could cross over to all areas of life, right? Because, I mean, the way you invest, I suppose, you know, at Peaks we always said how you do anything is how you do everything. And I'm sure how you invest can quite often be how you address your relationships or how you address other parts of your life. But investing, this whole idea of money working for you, it used to be sort of just the rich that understood that. And that's why they kept getting richer, because the money worked harder than they did. But truly it is becoming more mainstream, or there's at least an awareness out there right now that average Joes like me and other people like me who really didn't have a formal education but can truly create wealth by understanding this one philosophy, right?
Yes, that's right. And you're also right. Remember that so many people have pension plans, 401k plans, RRSPs, and so on and so forth. And so people are investing, whether they like it or not. It's thrust upon them. And furthermore, I think just reality means that people need to be focused on this. Look, I'm part of the baby boom generation, and you kind of look there and you go, how many people are really actually out there with the correct amount of money necessary for their retirement. They're not. A lot of the baby boomers, I guess they thought Social Security would be enough, but now we know that Social Security is only enough for a cup of coffee, so that's not going to really support us, certainly not in the life we've become accustomed to. So it's critical that I think nearly everybody go out there and say, hey, I need to control this money, learn something. It's not hard to make money in the market if we allow ourselves to do it and not set up blocks to do it.
That's really interesting. I had something happen to me a few years ago. And this is before I became more aware and more sophisticated in my investment strategies. And I had a 401k. And, you know, it was controlled by quite a large institution. And that institution had a money manager that was the guy I met with quite often. And I didn't do it for very long, but I did it because my tax accountant said, hey, listen, you should do this. So I did. I invested some money in that rather than pay taxes, blah, blah, right? And what ended up happening was I sat down with him one time and I hadn't invested for years and years and years, but he kept calling me. So I decided to go and meet with him. And at this point, he's 74. And here he is controlling the money. The little bit that I'd put in was still in there, right? He'd only lost about half of it, maybe a little bit more, right? But here he is at 74. And I said, can I ask you a question? I won't use his name. I said, can I ask you a serious question? And he said, yeah. I said, are you working because you love to? Or are you working because you have to? He said, honestly, I have to. So here's the guy managing my money in a portfolio for a large financial institution that was really broke and was actually continuing to work. And so when you just said about, you know, taking responsibility for your own financial education and saying, look, you know, just start today with that education process and actually start, you know, taking responsibility for your own I mean, it really is quite serious that a lot of people out there who are looking after these funds really don't have the experience or the expertise and certainly aren't wealthy themselves, right?
Oh, you know, I just literally today posted a blog post on my website, CourtneySmith.com, and it was all about excuses for failure, for alibis for failures, I called it, and it was about exactly guys like that. And what happens is that so many of these so-called professionals, and I guess you have to call them professionals because they're actually paid to do their job, but the reality is they really don't know what they're doing. And my blog post was about alibis for failure. And so what you hear is you hear so many of these professionals, these Wall Street professionals, say things like, well, you can't time the market, and, you know, the markets are manipulated, and, you know, all these things which are really just excuses for their own failure. And I keep looking at them, and I've been doing this professionally for 40 years, and I just, my jaw drops, and I say, wait a minute, you've been doing this for how many years, and you still don't know how to time the market? Why don't you go get a job where you can hold your head up and be proud of being an expert? But so many of them, they don't take the time to learn their own business. And as a result, they don't do a good job. More importantly, they don't do a good job for you and I, right, as customers. And yet we pay them money. And you sit there and go, what? Let me give a statistic. It's a scary statistic. But we know that only about 25% of mutual fund managers beat the market in an average year. 75% of mutual fund managers underperform. Now, and these are guys typically getting paid $300,000-$500,000 a year, and you sit there and say, so a dart will outperform most mutual fund managers. That's a scary statistic. And what it tells me is that the common person using common sense can significantly outperform the so-called professionals. I'm motivated by many things in order to teach people how to invest. But one of my biggest thrills, perhaps my biggest thrill, is to watch so-called ordinary people consistently outperform the professionals. And our business mission is to change people's lives. And I'm not a doctor, so I can't save somebody's life, but I can help people get rich. And yet I don't feel that Wall Street is devoted to that at all.
Well, I interrupted. Carry on.
Yeah, let me give one specific story. I was hired by a major bank to do a turnaround of a brokerage house. and the brokerage house was losing money. And I took the brokerage house sales from about $50 million to $100 million in just 7 months. And here's what I did. I brought all 480 employees into a theater, and I said, from now on, all I want you to do is obsess over client profitability. That's all I want you to do. All I want you to do is to think about how can we help the client make money. And this revolutionized the brokerage business, because no broker or banker ever sits around and says, how can we help the customer make money? And yet that's what the broker should be doing. And by just asking that simple question, and of course, we didn't succeed all the time, just asking that question helped us double our business. And that's not at all what they think about on Wall Street.
No. You know, it's fascinating, because I was going to ask you a question when you were talking about these stats, and they are horrendous, 75% underperform. And, you know, when I've been sitting in front of, and again, I don't want to know, I know there's some very, very good ones out there, and I'm not trying to sort of paint everyone with the same brush, but truly, back then, when I walked in there, I didn't know that I had another choice. I didn't realize that I could go out there and learn this myself and create true wealth and be in control of that wealth. I thought that was the way, because that's what I was told to do, and I didn't know anything else. And until you, maybe this is the conversation someone's listening to right now, where some of the people listening will say, you know, oh, really? I can do that? Because when you go in, just explain this process. When you go in there and they pull out this graph and they say, look, here's what we're going to do. We're going to diversify your money through all these different funds.
Yeah.
And I understand diversification, and I believe I understand it. But truly, in so many ways, does it seem like they're backing every horse in the race because the performance is so bad? Or is that diversification, when they do it so sweepingly, is that a strategy that really wins?
No, it's a strategy guaranteed to be mediocre.
Right.
You know, the old joke is it's not diversification, it's diversification. And what they're really doing is they're copping out. They're saying, well, you know what? We can't really pick whichever one of these is going to go up. So we'll just buy them all. And, you know, something's bound to go up. And, well, of course, that means something's bound to go down. So it is a formula for mediocrity. And so I look at that and I go, well, okay, formula for mediocrity minus commissions minus fees means that I underperform mediocre. Which, once again, they are setting up a structure which guarantees underperforming. But what it does do is it means, and the reason why they do it is because there won't be any catastrophic losses. In other words, they're not trying to be right. They're just trying to not be wrong by very much. Well, you know, David, I'll ask you, is the correct way to achieve great things in your life to try to actually create a structure where you're slightly wrong all the time?
No, I hear you. I'm telling you. But so let's look at this then. The guy sitting, again, a girl, lady, man, families are sitting out there right now listening to you. And they want to start. They say, okay, you know what? I'm not gonna be in this mediocre place anymore. I'm not gonna hand my money over to someone, and let them underperform my money by 75%, which is again is a stat. It's a real stat. I'm gonna start. How does someone start taking control without sort of, you know, because there's that fear in the middle, right? Well, if I take it all and I lose it all, now it's me. How do you take that one step? What's a strategy to go from being completely out of control to starting to take control and starting to do exactly what you said, which is empowering yourself to understand those few rules? Because there's only a few set of rules, right? There's not thousands of rules, right?
No. It's, as I say, the intellectual knowledge is simple. So I think that actually putting it into place is the hard part. But the actual intellectual knowledge is surprisingly simple. The first thing is I would go to sites like Investopedia, and just learn the basic terms. What is a stock? What does it mean to go long? What does it mean to go short? How do I buy stocks? What's a broker? Why do I need a broker? And what you'll find is that there's a whole series of these types of basic questions that you need to know. I always tell people it's like you got to go out and learn a new language. It's got 25 words in the language, but no grammar. If you go to YouTube, I have a channel. My company is called Wealth Builder, and we have a whole series of free videos that answer these basic questions. You know, what is a stock? What is a stock market? So Investopedia, or go to YouTube and go to Wealth Builder or Courtney Smith, and you'll see this basic information. Now, once you look at that basic information, what you're going to find out is that the concepts of investing, the basic concepts are really very simple. It's just a new set of terms you need to learn, and there's not very many of them. Now, once you get that basic information, you start to then build some confidence that, hey, maybe this is not so hard. Maybe this is not some esoteric knowledge that I need an investment priest to teach it to me. And then you can go to the second level. And depending on how you best learn, you may be able to buy a book on investing, or you take a course on investing, something like that. The only thing that I would caution you on is with either the book or the course, make sure that it's taught by a person who is a professional. In other words, a person who actually makes money in the market, not a person who's a professional teacher or a professional book author, someone who actually every day goes out there and makes money in the market. That would be the only caveat I have, but there's many, many good books out there. There's many good courses out there. Of course, I like to think mine are the best, but there's lots of other, there's a million ways to make money in the marketplace, not just the web.
Courtney, if we use your adage there about somebody who's a professional in the market doing it every day, I mean, I know your Marco Fund, it was like 23% a year for 5 years. I mean, you're somebody who, again, has been so embedded in every facet of investment and with great success. And so, you know, even though you said that I think I'm the best, but the truth is you really stand up. I mean, if you do the litmus test on your career, you are somebody who has earned your stripes in all areas of the financial world, right?
Thank you very much for those kind words. I've been involved in for 40 years, that I will admit to. Been a mutual fund manager, been the chief investment officer of a mutual fund manager, run trading desks for major financial institutions, ran a hedge fund, a stock picking newsletter, futures picking newsletter, all kinds of stuff. I've been around the block quite a few times. I'm actually up to 8 books now. It's kind of sad, but that's what I do in my spare time.
Anyway, so my point was, even though you said that I think I'm the best, I mean, someone can do their homework and figure out pretty quickly whether somebody is in the market, earning their living, and is really passionate and successful in it, as opposed to, like you said, a professional teacher or somebody who makes money selling ideas, even though they haven't been in the arena themselves, which is really a bad strategy, right?
Yeah, there's no question. What happens is that... 2 points. Number one, I trade every single day. And when I'm getting off the podcast with you, I'm going to go back to doing my research for the day and put together my trades for the day. I do that every single day. And that's how I make my living. The second thing is, you're absolutely right. There's many, many people who aspire to be gurus without actually having traded in the world. So, you know, you sit there and go like, what? Why don't you earn the right to teach me by actually doing something in the real world? And so please look very, very closely at the biography of the people who are purporting to be experts. You know, one of the most popular teachers out here in Asia, where I am right now, you know, he talks about how, well, he was a vice president of J.P. Morgan, and he left J.P. Morgan to start his foreign exchange training business. Well, then you find out that, yes, he was a vice president at J.P. Morgan, but he was in the IT department. And you go like, what? The guy has no professional Forex trading experience, but now he makes millions and millions of dollars teaching people how to trade foreign exchange. But it could be argued he's never really done it himself professionally. So look for somebody who's earned the right to teach you so that you can make sure that the information is from somebody who's actually used those techniques to make money in the real world, not in the world where they want to sell you something.
That's awesome. And, you know, I know you've been on over 1,000 TV shows, Wall Street Journal Report, Moneyline, CNBC, Fox News, Bloomberg, CNN. You know, there's I'm fascinated because, again, this world that you live in where you truly, you know, you make your living this way. When you're doing that kind of work, when you're out there in the media, in the spotlight, what's been some of your favorite experiences and why? Why, you know, because it must be interesting to be in a global stage, have that spotlight on you, and people are bringing you there because of your experience. But have you got any favorites?
Well, from personal stories, of course, most of the stories are how I was able to put both of my feet in my mouth at the same time. So, for example, I was on CNBC, and CNBC is owned by General Electric. So I'm on CNBC, and these shows are live, basically. And, you know, I mean, there's, I'm sure, a few second delay. But so somebody called in. It's a call-in show. I'm on CNBC. It's owned by General Electric, and some, you know, member of the audience calls in and says, "Courtney, what do you think about General Electric?" And I said, "Well, I think General Electric is really, really overpriced right now. I think it's a hedge fund in drag, and I think people should short sell the stock." Now, you have to imagine, I'm on a set out in New Jersey. The whole staff, there's the camera people, the directors, the all of the anchors, the whole set just stops still for a second and stares at me because I just bit the hand that fed me. And it was like, what? This dead silence, right? That I just said what I just said. Guess what? They didn't invite me back on CNBC for quite a few months after doing that.
Lucky there wasn't a trapdoor under that chair.
Oh, man, or a firing squad out back in the parking lot. I mean, I've been able to do that many times on television.
That's awesome. So going back then, so you're picking the right person. And somebody who's really in the arena, somebody who has a proven track record, somebody again who has a philosophy as well about creating profits for their people. What's next?
Well, then the most important part. See, the knowledge that you need, I keep saying, is quite easy. Don't let that, you know, don't think, oh, it's very complicated to learn how to make money. No, it's very simple. It's very, very simple. In my classes, I teach techniques that have been around for 50 years that have made money every single year. So I know it's simple. But will you actually do it? Or does it fall into the dieting category? That's the hard part. So you've got to make the commitment that you want to make your money work for you. You've got to make the commitment that you're going to spend 15 minutes a day. In our courses, we ask people to spend 15 minutes a day. And, you know, people say, well, that's just marketing hype, Courtney. You're just saying, you know, make $1 million in 15 minutes a day. But the 15 minutes doesn't come from marketing. Here's where it comes from. And in my classes, I say to people, how many people can focus like a laser beam for 8 hours a day? And no one will raise their hand. And then I'll say, how many people can focus like a laser beam for an hour a day? And I'll get a few people raising their hands. And then I'll say, how many people can focus for 15 minutes a day? And then I'll get nearly everybody to raise their hands. The point is that you need to set aside that 15 minutes a day where you focus on that, where you've turned off the Facebook, you've turned off the email, and now you're sitting down and going through the process of making money. It's only 15 minutes a day. But what will happen is people will delay it and they'll put it off and then they'll put on a trade and it'll be a losing trade and then they lose confidence and then they say, well, I'll get back to this later. It's an amazing thing that you can hand people the keys to making a lot of money and they still won't do it. And so to me, David, the most important thing is you've got to just do it. You can't talk about getting rich. You got to get rich. I know it sounds ridiculous.
No. I wanted to jump in because I think there's a parallel in life, right, which I think is so blaring at me right now. is this idea of every master was once a disaster, and that very few people, whether it's network marketing or whether it's trading or whether it's real estate investing, you know, they go into the first deal and expect to be a master and don't give themselves the ability and the time. And like, because I mean, if they gave 15 minutes a day, just imagine after 365 days what they would know and understand. But be, like you said, what typically will happen, again, if we use any arena, we can say the same thing happens to 90% of people. They'll go in, it won't go as well as they thought. They start to beat the crap out of themselves. And then what they take the exit.
Yeah.
Blame themselves, blame the market, blame the person that taught them, instead of saying, oh, I get it, I'm learning, I'm in the process of mastery, which is going to take me some time. So let me ask you the question then. Someone's coming in. They come in with this philosophy, so they start to learn the language. They learn these simple and really proven strategies. I mean, that's what we're talking about. You're talking about strategies of years and years and years and years and years that never fail. And then they come in, they start to focus like a laser beam. How do they, and they understand the stop put, so they're not their money's not losing. Should they have an amount of money to start? Should they say, look, I'm going to have, or is that an amount of money every month they put in? Do they start with $1,000? Do they start with $100 a month? How does someone sort of gauge so they can give themselves that 1, 2, 3 years of so they can become the master?
You know, I think that's a great question, because, and I think that the answer is whatever you have. Now, let's be practical for a second. We now have the ability where commissions on investing in stocks are trivial. But, you know, you could buy now one share of a stock, for heaven's sakes. What you need to do is start with $1,000, let's say. It doesn't require a lot. And get involved, get your head into the game, and start to make it a habit to add money into your account every time you can, once a month. Listen, David, you've taught so much about over the years about how to control your money that you're an expert on this in terms of how people should be saving money and how much of their monthly income they should be saving. You're the expert at this. Take that money, do something with it. Start with $1,000, $2,000, $500, and then just start getting into the habit. Once again, you know as well as anybody that if you don't make a habit of something, it doesn't happen. Right. You can't reinvent the wheel every month and say, oh, you know, I really should invest some money. No, make it a habit. Take the money off the top. Take that 10% off the top and live on the rest, because it's your future you're talking about with that money that you're saving, that you're investing.
You know,
and I'm sorry, one last comment. Remember compounding. Mm. If I put in $1,000 this year and I make 10%, that means next year I'm going to make $110, not $100. And the year after that, I'm going to make more. And if I keep adding $1,000 and compounding my money at 10% or 20% or 30%, I'm going to be a millionaire. I'm going to be a millionaire. And it's an automatic process. It can't not happen.
I was going to say, you know, my journey with real estate was interesting because it has so many parallels, again, to what you're talking about. In the beginning, you know, we started with a little tiny house and, you know, and it took a lot of work and the renters were awful, you know, and it was all hands-on, you know, and then we bought a duplex and then a triplex, then an apartment building, then a mobile home park, you know, and then mini store. But as we started to understand, and as we started to grow, and as we started to understand the rules, you know, it really became, not only was it very profitable, it became a tremendous amount of fun and tremendously hands-off in the end, in so many ways. I mean, we do so little work for all of the properties that we own today. And understanding what to buy, how to buy, and the instincts that we have and the experience that we have allows us to get great deals. And, you know, there's been the occasions where, you know, we've lost something on, but it never bothers us because we know overall it's an ongoing lifetime strategy that we play by. And that's what you're really talking about. You're talking about this creating a lifetime habit, you know, and that $1,000, if there is an application, I always say if people took 10% of their income and invested it in themselves, but if we can take our money and we take a percentage of our money and we put that money to work. And even if we don't have a lot, if we start with a small amount, whatever it is, and we get that money and the habit of money working for us, truly wealth is there for everyone to have, right?
Oh, there's no question. It just automatically comes. Remember, I just said you can't not be successful if you follow very simple principles and very simple rules. There's no way you can't become a millionaire. And you don't need to start with a lot. You need to start with a small amount of money. You need to add to it consistently. You need to follow simple rules of investing. And then you can't not be a success. It's impossible not to be successful. And that passion that you're hearing in my voice is because I'm so frustrated by so many people who feel like it's overwhelming for them to become rich. It's not overwhelming. It's not hard. It's just a consistent application of simple principles and rules done consistently and persistently. I tell people in my trading courses, I say, when you're trading, don't think, just execute flawlessly. Because if you're having to think, that means you haven't figured out the rules. No, just execute the rules. Don't sit and think, just do it. And that to me is the biggest thing. People they get filled with anxiety and they start to second guess themselves, and then their confidence goes down, and then they don't do what they're supposed to do, and then their confidence goes down more, and it just goes on and on and on of the self-sabotage that they have when they have all of the skills and all of the knowledge to be super successful.
Yeah.
And that it's unbelievable to me.
You know, and what's more overwhelming is being poor. and poverty is so overwhelming. And the truth is that what I love about what you're talking about here is that it's an empowering conversation. And there's very, very little risk, but there's a responsibility of each person to stay in the game long enough to understand the game and not Absolutely. Not to get to that place that says, well, it doesn't work. I hear this all the time. It doesn't work. Really? Well, right. Let's have a look at Courtney's portfolio. We'll figure out right. if it works. Well, it works if you do the same things. If you think the same way and do the same thing that rich people do, you're going to become rich. But Courtney, I want to ask you one other question. I've got a couple more questions because we're getting close to the end of the show. How does someone come and play with you? And I use that term to say have fun, work with you. How can someone get involved? I mean, I know CourtneySmith.com is your website. And if they were to come in there, where's a great place to start out if they wanted to educate themselves and come and use your strategies and partner with you in some way?
CourtneySmith.com is useful because you can actually sign up for a free daily e-letter, which is filled with commentary and education. So sometimes I'll actually be talking about current market situations and propose ways that people can make money. In addition, there's also education in those daily e-letters. So it's a very small bite of information that can help you every single day. Also on the site are lists of courses that I've got. You can go to Amazon and see the books that are available. But if you go to CourtneySmith.com, you'll pretty much find everything that we're involved in by starting there. That's the easiest place to go.
Awesome. And then, you know, the show's called The Kick-Ass Life. If I was to ask you what a kick-ass life is to Courtney Smith, how do you answer that question?
Listen, I'm sitting here right now in Kuala Lumpur. I'm here at the Grand Hyatt. I've been in Thailand, Australia, South Africa, all in the last several weeks. I'll be in Singapore next, then I'll be in the U.S. One of the reasons that I love being a professional trader is because it enables me to live a kick-ass life. Trading to me is the ideal business because it enables me to live a five-star life. I travel probably 6 months of the year, and I stay in resorts. I've traded from the beach in Bali. I've traded from the beach in Costa Rica, from the beach in Nicaragua, from the beach in Jamaica. In other words, I can trade anywhere I want, there is mediocre. It doesn't even have to be good internet. It just has to be okay internet, and I can make a living. And to me, it's like I say, why wouldn't anybody want to be a professional investor? Because it is the ultimate in kick-ass life. Mm-hmm. I will get off with you. I do spend several hours a day running my business from overseas or wherever I am. I spend my 15 minutes a day on trading, and then I have the rest of the day off. That's a kick-ass life, and I'm in an exotic location like Kuala Lumpur as we do this interview.
That is awesome. Life's a beach.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it is. It is.
Hey, Courtney, you know what? I really, really, really appreciate you coming on. I'd love to come back. There's so many more questions I have for you. And I love that your passion, I mean, it really oozes through your voice and your passion for your profession and your passion for helping the little guy wake up and take control and take responsibility for their own wealth and your passion for everyday life. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, thank you, David, for the opportunity, and keep doing a great job.
Thanks, man.
So I love that piece, you know, about giving yourself time each day. 15 minutes is not a lot, right? Just to sort of focus and to learn these things. So hopefully you found some great gems and words of wisdom and enjoy meeting Courtney. He certainly is a stand-up guy. I thought I'd play another song before I wrap up the show and got some things to share with you. But this is from Lady Gaga. And again, the theme, Money Honey. That's money.
Champagne while my girls toast. Oh yeah. It's good to live expensive, you know it, but my knees get weak.
It's amazing what a legend she is as far as her success. And I really think it comes down to that passion. I remember Oprah Winfrey talking about Lady Gaga on one of the shows we had here. If you didn't listen to the Oprah show, you can go back and find it. Well, in fact, right now you may not be able to, because we are going we'll be going to a whole new setup here, so things are a little bit out of whack, so people can't find old shows on iTunes right now. Don't worry, it'll all come back. You just gotta be patient over these next few weeks as we start building this out. We're having a gathering of the minds here at my house. So we've got some great people coming up to help with all of this. So yeah, if you can be patient, we'll all be there and we'll have everything for you and have a greater system than we've had. And you know, it's really about direction and looking at the sort of the global impact that we want to have in the world and sort of being able to allow you to link arms with us and truly sort of be able to create a brand that not only signifies that sort of great change, you know, sort of the essence of a kick-ass life, but really creating a brand that we can sort of build on for generations to come. So, you know, it's really about a massive vision. And so if you can be patient with us as we're sort of bringing in different experts to work with us, it means that things are going to have to, we're going to sort of have to give up good to get great, as they say, give up even great to get exceptional, you know, but I know that we've got a lot of work to do. If you want to go to the show notes, thekickasslife.com/234, that's /234. If you didn't do the goal setting, the smarter goal setting on Monday show, go back and make sure you do that. It's only a 10-minute show, but really give yourself a direction to do that. And you can find us on Facebook. That is davidonfacebook.com, davidonfacebook.com. And I really, really appreciate so much all of you that have left reviews on iTunes. It really is our way of reaching and impacting the world. So, you know, if you can take a few minutes out of your day to do that. I know I keep asking, but you know, it's just one of those things. It's easy to think about when you're sort of jogging, but then you get home and forget all about it. So if you can do that, that'd be very, very helpful. And again, I hope you enjoyed the show, and I will definitely see you on the other side.
That was kick-ass.